We're back on the Michael Coolidge Show. It seems like eons it's been since we last checked in with Gail Trotter. It's been since last year, actually. We haven't talked with Gail since 2015, and she joins us now from Washington, D.C. Gail, Happy New Year, and welcome back on the Michael Coolidge Show.
Happy New Year, and great to be with you. It's hard to believe that we haven't talked since last year. It's really remarkable.
I know. It's funny. Like, there are very few guests that come on as regularly as you do. And, I mean, I talk with you more than I talk with my mother.
You don't know? Tell your mother that.
I know.
I'll be in big trouble.
I know. My poor mom. Or lucky mom. You know, we probably talk each other's ears off. But no, it's always great talking with you. And yeah, it's been two Fridays, I guess, because of the holidays, because of New Year and Christmas. And some stuff has happened then politically. Not a ton. There was the big town hall meeting on CNN last night, which I know you watched, and yes. I did as well. I DVR'd it, and I skimmed through some of it and caught some of the discussion afterwards. And I know that is an issue that is really, really near and dear to your heart, which we'll get to in a little bit. But first, most importantly, how was your Christmas and New Year?
We had an amazing Christmas with our family. I think I told you that we had probably 40 people over to our house, and I cooked for everybody, and any mother of six children just dreads trying to get everything prepared in time for Christmas. It's a lot of work. It's very stressful. But then when you pull it off and you're sitting there with all your family and everyone is sated from eating all that food, you just feel like the biggest, like there's, I really can't think of anything in my life that brings more satisfaction that I think, oh, you know, I really did a good job than that feeling after everybody's fed on Christmas Day.
That had to be like such a wonderful accomplishment, not just for your six kids and your husband, but for the other couple of dozen people there as well. And I don't even know. Do you consider yourself a good cook or a good baker?
I really enjoy cooking, but I don't get the opportunity a lot because we're so busy to have like a real meal. So Christmas is a really good opportunity. But honestly, I don't do it all myself. I'm sure my family's like most families. Everybody brings stuff. Everybody who comes brings a side dish or something. So you get a good variety of food, and everyone's sure to get something that they like. I have three older sisters, and so they'll make sure to bring something that one of their kids likes so that they make sure everybody has something that they really look forward to and enjoy. And I'll tell you, I'd like to vote for us to have Christmas and New Year's on Friday every year.
Oh my gosh, wasn't that fantastic? It was like two extra long weekends in a row. And yeah, that was the longest we'd ever been on break, I think, almost in the show's history. I counted there were 12 days between new shows, and it was mainly because of the calendar.
Right, and it felt really different this year, I think. And then after Christmas, we went up to New York City for a few days, and it was really packed, and it was just nice to kind of get out of D.C. and see all the Rockettes show and the people wandering around and looking at the windows on Fifth Avenue. Not buying anything on Fifth Avenue, but definitely looking in the windows. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and then New Year, what did you do for that?
We just went out to dinner with just the eight of us. And did a 5 o'clock dinner because, you know, when you have little kids, some of my children are little, you can't be up till midnight. And then we do midnight on Trotter standard time, which means we actually celebrate midnight at 10 o'clock so that all the kids can enjoy the countdown, but it's not really midnight.
Oh, I was thinking, like, what? Is the Trotter clan originally from like the Mountain Time Zone or something? But no, it's you do your own countdown at 10 o'clock. That's
right.
Good. Yeah, yeah. Because then you don't want to be that party pooper who fell asleep at 11:30. You know, you got so close.
Yeah, and then my husband and I stay up and do a real midnight for ourselves, but it's just the two of us, so that's more fun. But what did you do for New Year's?
We went to Atlanta, drove there and back, and then stayed here in Illinois, went to a friend's house and spent the night in Evanston with a couple of other people on New Year's Eve. But the thing I liked about driving was that we got to listen to a lot of radio, and we caught up on some podcasts and listened to a bunch of different talk radio stations throughout Illinois/Kentucky/Atlanta. We spent most of the time listening to podcasts, honestly. Serial, that Serial podcast.
Oh, yeah.
This new one's about Bo Bergdahl last year was the thing. Have you listened to that at all?
I haven't listened to it, but I've followed it. I've read pieces written on it, but I haven't actually had a chance to listen to it. Did you like it?
Yeah, really, really liked it. There's three or four entire shows about how the complete change of the industry really went down when you can't say sugar anymore about cereal. Like, you have to say, like, it was super golden crisp instead of super sugar crisp. And there was a whole one about Count Chocula and how much that changed the whole cereal game. It's very interesting, the whole concept of cereal. But no, we seriously did listen to it, and we enjoyed it a lot. And now it's got me intrigued about this Netflix documentary that everyone's talking about, this Making of a Murderer, which some people are calling like the TV version of cereal.
Right.
And I haven't started watching them yet. Natalie, we talked about it on the show yesterday, saw the whole thing. Joe, I know behind the glass, saw the whole thing as well. Have you seen any of that?
I have not, but I had somebody call me today to ask my opinion on it. So I think I need to allocate some time to watch it. But what did Natalie think? Was she persuaded that they had been railroaded, or how did she come down on it?
Natalie, what did you say? You said that he didn't do the first crime. You think he did the second crime. Yeah.
Ah.
And Joe thinks the same thing. And of course, I have no idea what anyone's talking about. All I watched was the trailer, but it supposedly, that doesn't matter what you think. Supposedly what it shows is how absolutely corrupt the justice system in this particular county was, how this was railroaded, and the things that went down, you just hope never happens to you or someone you know. And you, as an attorney, I would love to hear your viewpoint of it after you watch it, if you watch it. I have to watch it.
I will get back to you on that.
Yeah, I think we should, because, you know, everyone else is talking about it, and I don't want to be ignorant. Did you get a chance to see? Did we talk about Star Wars the last time you were on, or no?
No, I'm embarrassed to say that my husband took the kids to see it in the run-up to Christmas, and I took that time to go Christmas present shopping, so I still have to see it. I'm definitely going to see it, but it'll have to be just by myself.
All right. Only thing I'll say is I hope you like Jar Jar Binks, because there's a whole lot of Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, please don't tell me that.
Yeah,
I do not like Jar Jar Binks.
There aren't many scenes that don't include Jar Jar Binks. That's all I'll say. All right. So politics-wise, all week we've been talking about how there are different sort of factions in the Republican Party. You've got some people calling Marco Rubio and Chris Christie sort of fighting for the establishment vote, whatever that is. And Ted Cruz, who is likely going to win Iowa, they're saying. Donald Trump's likely going to win New Hampshire. Now people are talking about we're already looking forward to the SEC primary, the South primary, and then Super Tuesday, March 1st. And then right here in Illinois, March 15th, the race will still, of course, be going on. And hopefully it will be whittled down a bit. But do you have any general thoughts, having a couple of weeks to sort of digest the whole race, how you see things shaping up? Any comments in general on the Republican primary?
It is really fascinating. I mean, you do see that the tone is shifting a bit. We this week had Donald Trump coming out talking about Ted Cruz's citizenship and whether or not he would be eligible to even take the office if he were to be nominated and to beat presumably Hillary. So that was kind of interesting that came out this week. And then Donald Trump backed off of it and said, well, you know, he'd just be tied up in all these lawsuits. And so it wasn't really that I was saying that he wasn't a natural born citizen and he wouldn't be eligible, but he could possibly have all these lawsuits. So he should go get a declaratory judgment and get it taken out of the question right now. But Andrew McCarthy, who is a former New York prosecutor and a great writer at the National Review, has a really excellent piece this week on this very issue, showing that it's a slam dunk that Ted Cruz is completely eligible to basically go into the presidency if he were to be nominated and elected. But it's interesting that the kind of issues that we're getting into now, and I predict we're going to see a lot more of these types of issues being raised that are not the policy issues, that are not the neuralgic issues, the kind of divisive issues that really Trump has put out there so much now that they're kind of old news, and people are flocking to his position, or they've distinguished themselves, but there isn't a lot of room to talk about those anymore. So I think we'll be seeing a lot more of these tertiary type issues going forward.
Yeah, because with the exception of maybe John Kasich, as far as the candidates who are left goes, there is a lot. There's more that unifies a lot of these candidates that divides them. I mean, like Rubio and Cruz are really, really similar on the issue.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to use these, and it's probably going to be Donald Trump who brings them up, who kind of picks away at them and distracts us really from talking about this stuff.
And I think too that when you think of the fact that a lot of these issues they're close together, I think what they're going to really have to do strategically is say, yes, people are saying this now, these candidates are saying this now, but are they going to deliver when they're in the White House? And so Rubio's argument is going to be, well, Cruz is principled and he stands by what he says, but he can't get things done. He can't get things accomplished. And Cruz is going to say the opposite about Rubio. Oh, you're saying all this stuff on issues like immigration, but you were part of the problem. You were part of the go-along crowd, the Washington cartel, and what you're saying now is just basically to get votes. But if you were to get to the Oval Office, you would lose those principles because you don't really hold those principles.
Yeah. And do you think there's merit to that argument from Cruz to Rubio?
I think on the immigration issue, I think there is a lot of merit to that criticism. And I think my perception is that when politicians are weak, show any weakness on a conservative principle, that when they get to D.C. or they get into higher office, they frequently cave for whatever reason, because they want to get invited to the Georgetown parties, or they want to get favorable coverage in the New York Times or the Washington Post. Something about them changes, and I see that's less likely to happen with Cruz because he's angered all those people and, you know, he just keeps going. But I think other than that, Rubio and Cruz are very, very tight on the issues.
Yeah, you know, I see that happening to Christie, getting part of the whole love of power and the little perks that come of it. And he's already demonstrated that as governor of New Jersey and all the sort of positive press he got a couple of years ago when he was the new man on the national scene and people were speculating that he might run for president in 2012, you know, going in the box with Jerry Jones, owner of the Cowboys, and going to a Bruce Springsteen concert and all that. I could see him kind of getting wowed by all that. Cruz, you're right. He's kind of like George W. Bush in that way. It's like he doesn't give a hoot about what Georgetown party he's invited to or not. And you, speaking of someone who lives in a neighborhood like that, right? And frequently hosts, you always have George Will and you have the elite of Washington at your house every night for dinner,
I
right?
I have not had George Will, but I have had some very noteworthy conservatives over to my house. So they'll go nameless for their own protection. But
I believe
George Will has not actually graced the presence of my home yet.
But Ted Cruz, He will be okay if he's not in the good graces of the dinner circuit of Washington D.C. Whereas Marco Rubio, there's no indications right now from me that he is. I don't know. I still believe that Marco Rubio is sort of the rights version of Barack Obama in that he actually appears to be a little bit more to the center and moderate, but at his core, he's conservative. Unlike a lot of politicians in the past on the right, like George H.W. Bush, for example,
right,
or some of these candidates who pretend to be conservative, but deep down they're moderates. I think, like Obama, deep down's hardcore liberal, but he comes across as not so leftist. Rubio, deep down at his core, I think is conservative, and that's really appealing to me.
Well, and you mentioned George H.W. Bush. You remember his famous quote that, read my lips, no new taxes. And as soon as he got into the White House, he ended up raising taxes and was lambasted for that. And I think the question with Rubio is he going to make any promises like that now, especially on immigration, where he's shown weakness that he's not going to follow through with once he gets to the Oval Office. So I think that remains to be seen.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about this this town hall that President Obama gave on CNN last night. I know a lot of you probably didn't watch it, but we did. And generally speaking, I don't think it was that bad as far as how it was conducted and how CNN put it together, and had some really tough questions asked directly to the president. We will talk about that with Gail Trotter after this on the Michael Kugel Show. Stay with us. This year, make a resolution to save a bundle on a fast internet connection with Rise Broadband. Keep connected with loved ones via Skype. Celebrate faster downloads and streaming videos. For just $49.95 a month, enjoy high-speed internet, digital phone service, managed router, plus free installation. That's a savings of up to $450. Call 855-730-3715 or visit Coolidge.com, that's spelled with a K, and click on the Rise Broadband banner. 855-730-3715. Rise Broadband. Feel free. There's a movement in healthcare today. It's a movement of people who are ready to stand up and take charge of their healthcare. It's people like you and me who are tired of paying too much for healthcare. It's people who are standing up for their values. Liberty HealthShare is leading the movement of people who are looking for an alternative to traditional health insurance. Choose your own doctor, your own hospital, and live out your values with Liberty HealthShare. Join the movement. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. For more information, visit joinlhs.com or call 800-722-8041. That's 800-722-8041.
Is it fair to call it a conspiracy? I mean, well, yeah. There's a lot of people really believe this deeply, that they just don't trust you.
I'm sorry, Cooper. Yes, it is fair to call it a conspiracy. What are you saying? Are you suggesting that the notion that we are creating a plot to take everybody's guns away so that we can impose martial law
is a conspiracy?
Yes, that is a conspiracy. I would hope that you would agree with that. Is that controversial? Except on some websites around the country?
There are certainly a lot of people who just have a fundamental distrust that you do not want to go further and further and further down this road.
Look, I'm only going to be here for another year. I don't know. When would I have started on this enterprise, right? I come from the state of Illinois, which... We've been talking about Chicago, but downstate Illinois is closer to Kentucky than it is to Chicago. And everybody hunts down there. And a lot of folks own guns. And so this is not like alien territory to me. Yes, it is a false notion that I believe is circulated for either political reasons or commercial reasons, in order to prevent a coming together among people of goodwill to develop common sense rules that will make us safer while preserving the Second Amendment.
Yeah, that's just a little taste of last night, this CNN town hall. And Gail, I got to be honest with you. I was not going to watch it until you and I chatted yesterday and talked about you coming on today, and you said, hey, you know, so we're going to talk about the CNN town hall thing, and I'm like, oh, I guess I got to watch this, because I know, I mean, obviously I care a lot about this issue, but this issue for you is huge. I mean, you've testified to Congress about this issue. First, what were your general thoughts about how it went last night on CNN, this town hall with President Obama on the gun issue?
That's a great question. I really like Anderson Cooper. I've been on his show before. I think he's actually a good person, and I respect his integrity and his journalism. Now, CNN obviously is a left-leaning network, and when I sat down to watch this, and I kind of thought like more like 10,000 feet level thinking about how they set this up, I didn't like how it was set up, because they had the man with the bully pulpit, President Barack Obama, who's trying to push through whatever gun control restrictions he can before his time is up on his days in the Oval Office. They had him sitting with Anderson Cooper in the middle of the circle with, you know, it's kind of a theater in the round. There are people on all sides. And he was the star, and he was the proponent. He was answering questions.
He is the president, though. I mean, that you do kind of get that. Doesn't the president, should say, not necessarily Barack Obama, doesn't the president kind of deserve that?
He can do a press conference, which he did. He can do an address from the Oval Office, which he has done. He can send all of his surrogates out. He can send out his press secretary. But I think for a journalistic endeavor, if it's this very divisive issue that people really care about, they should have a strong representative of the other side who can talk in the town hall format, too. You don't have to have it be a debate. I get why the president would never agree to a debate on this. But you could have someone who's just as strong against what he's trying to do, who thinks that the solutions that the other person has are the common sense solutions that will reduce violence, will reduce gun violence. So I think that the setup was a bad setup. And I think Anderson Cooper, when he had the chance, he asked tough questions, but he didn't ask enough of them, and he let the president take too much command of the situation. I did think that the guests that they had represented a better spectrum of differing views on it. They had American Sniper Chris Kyle's wife on to ask a question.
Yes.
I thought she's a powerful. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
Question that I thought that was really
that was
powerful.
Great. I think let's play a clip of that.
We're at an all-time low for a murder rate. That's a big deal. And yet I think most of us in this country feel like it could happen at any moment. It could happen to any of us at any time. And I'm almost finished just when you talk about the NRA and after a mass shooting that gun sales go up, I would argue that it's not necessarily that I think somebody's going to come take my gun from me, but I want the hope and the hope that I have the right to protect myself, that I don't end up to be one of these families, that I have the freedom to carry whatever weapon I feel I need, just like your wife said on that farm road. You know, the sheriffs aren't going to get to my house either. And I understand that background checks aren't necessarily going to stop me from getting a gun, but I also know that they wouldn't have stopped any of the people here in this room from killing, and so it seems like almost a false sense of hope. So why not celebrate where we are? I guess that's my real question is,
well,
celebrate that we're good people, and 99.9% of us are never going to kill anyone.
Yeah, I was just impressed that they found her, they invited her, CNN I'm talking about, and had her speak there, and really like with no limit, you know, like she kind of made a point there. It wasn't just like a direct question.
Right.
And I thought all the people who asked questions, I don't know if they hypnotized them or something ahead of time, but nobody seemed nervous. Everybody seemed really calm.
Whatever.
Yeah, the tone I really liked. And I've criticized CNN a lot. I don't like the way that they do everything. The whole standing moderator and the debate thing, I'm not a huge fan of. But I couldn't find a lot to criticize, honestly, about last night. I agree with you that Anderson Cooper let Obama off a little bit. And I mean, but the president is so I retweeted something Brandon Morse tweeted last night. He said, Obama's doing a good job making me lose track of what he's talking about. He's
right.
Dancing, not answering. And I'm not going to play a clip of President Obama talking here again, because that's what he does. Like he got asked the direct question by Anderson Cooper. Because Obama tried to bash the NRA for not showing up.
Right.
NRA didn't like how it was going to be set up. And so he said, well, we've invited the NRA to meet. And then Anderson Cooper pressed him on that, saying, oh, are you inviting them right now? And he couldn't answer the question directly.
No.
You know?
No. And I think that the interesting thing about the entire town hall was, if you watch it, you go back and watch it, the place where Obama got most fired up was when he was talking about whether there was this conspiracy theory about what his actual agenda is. And that's why I wrote this piece at the Daily Caller talking about genocide and oppression and how there's a three-step process to governments being able to oppress or murder their citizens. And he really understands that that is what people think is possible if you take away the Second Amendment from our constitutional privileges, because that's the privilege that undergirds all of our other rights under the Constitution and just generally in our society. And he got really, really worked up about it. And this was a place where I thought Anderson Cooper did a great job, because he said something, I wrote it down, a lot of people feel this deeply. And Obama pushed back and said, you know, but it is fair to call it a conspiracy. Don't you agree? I hope you'll agree with me. And Anderson was really trying to put it across to Obama that, you know, they distrust you. that you want to go further and further. So you're saying we'll do this small thing that's common sense and we're not going to go any further. But you have the New York Times front page editorial saying that we should have gun confiscation. Barack Obama has said that he favors what has happened in Australia, which did have confiscation. And you see that it's this inexorable march to more and more government control and taking away, you know, chipping at the Second Amendment right that we all have individually to keep and bear arms. So I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah, that exchange was awesome. And we're going to play it when we find it here in the next segment. But the comments that were brought up, like Gabby Gifford's husband spoke, the astronaut who, his wife was shot in Arizona years ago. And he has become a big gun control advocate. And he made this kind of extreme straw man argument about there are 300 guns in the United States, Mr. President. Please tell us how exactly you're going to confiscate them all. And he made the joke and people laughed or they giggled. It wasn't that funny. But he was trying to make the point like, hey, these nut jobs think that you're going to come and take their guns. But I'm sorry, when you talk about restricting certain types of guns and we talk about making it a lot more difficult and really putting an extreme amount of paperwork into somebody being able to purchase a gun and threatening them. We talked about this with Kerry Pickett earlier this week from the Daily Caller. Who wrote a piece about this right when he gave the Oval Office the White House speech where he got teary eyed. There are fines of something like $200,000 if there would be fines of $200,000 if somebody doesn't get this this license to be like a gun dealer, essentially, if they simply buy and sell like one or two guns.
Right.
Everyone in the country is essentially going to need to become a certified gun dealer if they buy or sell a gun anywhere. And that is putting a pretty undue burden on somebody's ability to exercise their right to a weapon, which is protected by the Second Amendment. So there was those moments where it got a little straw man-y. But one of the most powerful moments I really was interested in hearing your opinion about, because I've heard a very similar sentiment expressed by you. You know what? Let's take a break, and we're going to play it when we come back with Gail Trotter from the Independent Women's Forum and GailTrotter.com. This is the Michael Kulin Show. Stay with us.
One question a lot of people have about you is, do you believe the fundamental notion that a good guy with a gun or a good woman with a gun is an important bulwark against a bad person with a gun? And before you answer, I want you to meet Kimberly Corbin. Kimberly was a college student in Colorado in 2006. Kimberly's right over there. She was raped by a man who broke into her apartment. She testified for 3 hours in the trial against him. Her attacker was sentenced to 24 years to life in prison. And I know that attack, Kimberly, changed your view of handguns. What's your question for the president?
Absolutely. As a survivor of rape and now a mother to two small children, you know, it seems like being able to purchase a firearm of my choosing and being able to carry that wherever me and my family are, it seems like my basic responsibility as a parent at this point. I have been unspeakably victimized once already, and I refuse to let that happen again to myself or my kids. So why can't your administration see that these restrictions that you're putting to make it harder for me to own a gun or harder for me to take that where I need to be is actually just making my kids and I less safe?
We're back on the Michael Kulin Show, and yes, that was Kimberly Corbin, a rape victim and a mother of two, who asked a really poignant question to President Obama last night in the CNN town hall show on this gun issue, which, if you're just joining us, the consensus on it was that it was actually pretty well done. CNN did a good job. They got a lot of people who disagree vehemently with the president to ask questions. There was a sheriff who's running for Congress who asked him, I think, some pretty good questions there. Chris Kyle's widow, Taya Kyle, asked a question, which we played earlier. And you just heard the question from Kimberly Corbin, this mother of two and, again, a victim of rape. And it was just really brave in general, Gail, we were chatting off the air about, of her to just openly admit that. That's not something that some women, or I mean, I would think anyone would be comfortable, you know, announcing to the national audience.
No, talking about it all is upsetting, and talking about it in public is upsetting. And then not only talking about it in public in front of the president, but then on national television that can go around the world. I mean, it's just incredibly brave. And it shows you, I think, how many American women treasure their right to keep and bear arms to protect themselves, because they know that over 90% of violent crime happens in the United States without a firearm. So in those situations, women are always at a disadvantage because generally they don't have the strength, the numbers. Frequently these attacks occur with more than one assailant, or they don't have the, you know, basically violent criminal nature that the people who do these attacks have. So in those circumstances, if a woman has a firearm, she has a fighting chance. She can reverse the balance of power, and she can use the gun as the great equalizer, as they say. And I think for this woman to come forward and share her deeply personal, upsetting, horrifying experience with President Obama to say, you know, you need to understand that your actions, you say that if we do this and we save just one life, then it's worthwhile, but there are costs to this because you're preventing people who otherwise would be more subject to violent crime if they can't have a means to defend themselves. And I don't think President Obama had a very good answer to that. He said, well, I want to make sure that if your assailant gets out of prison, that he can't go easily get a firearm and, you know, come back after you or someone like you, something to that effect. And I thought that was such a straw man, because the assailant was able to do that in the first place without a firearm. And, you know, it just kind of negated what she was trying to tell the president in the first place.
And we do have a clip of him saying this, which rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Again, he's speaking to a woman who admitted that she was raped and is a mother of two, and she wants her right to protect herself protected, and she's a gun owner now, and confronted the president on these new, you know, this new executive action, and he said this at the end of it.
There are always questions as to whether or not having a firearm in the home protects you from that kind of violence. And I'm not sure we can resolve that. People argue it both sides. What is true is that you have to be pretty well trained in order to fire a weapon against somebody who is assaulting you and catches you by surprise. And what is also true is there's always the possibility that that firearm in a home leads to a tragic accident. Yeah, we can debate that round or flat.
Yeah, so what he essentially said was, you can get a pistol or a weapon to protect yourself, Kimberly, but also know that you might not be smart enough to protect your kids from this gun that might be in the house, too. Like, how patronizing was that?
Totally patronizing. And I think after the town hall, they had some commentators talking, and one of them was citing a study from Johns Hopkins saying that you're more likely to hurt yourself with a gun than defend yourself with a gun. And it's ridiculous, because that agency or school at Johns Hopkins is funded by the millions of dollars by Michael Bloomberg, who's one of the biggest gun control advocates, who hypocritically relies on armed security guards to protect his own safety.
Right.
So I think President Obama really stumbled there, but I'm not sure how people will react to, you know, the way he responded to her.
I prefer to use the term anti-gun rights extremist when I talk about Michael Bloomberg. This is something a little inside Washington and esoteric, but my listeners follow this, and I assume you do. Hugh Hewitt, in the town hall talking head roundtable,
yes,
afterwards, mentioned that this whole thing is pointless, or it's just so toothless. this executive action that the president did. If he was serious about this, he would have tried to put this in the omnibus bill, the big budget bill that we talked about weeks ago before Christmas. But it, you know, the way that any sort of new regulation or law should go through, you know, something of this magnitude that he's looking to change, that's what Congress is for. We have a system of checks and balances. He should have put it into the omnibus bill. He had an opportunity a bunch of weeks ago to do it, and he didn't. And then he still goes and blames Congress about it for not funding the ATF or whatever. So does Hugh Hewitt have a point that the president here is just being disingenuous?
He does, and this issue kind of goes back to the separation of powers that you and I have talked about for a long time, that President Obama, when he can't get his absolute way through Congress, he wants to go around it. He wants to use executive actions and other things in order to avoid having to go get the people's representatives to debate and vote on the policies that he wants, and I think this is really disturbing. Hugh Hewitt, who's a constitutional lawyer, also made the point that these executive actions would be seen as void for vagueness, which means that they are so ethereal that you don't even know what you mean. An important principle of law is that you understand what the law is so that you're sure you don't violate it. And if you violate it, then the law and the government can come in and say, well, you had this guilty mind, mens rea, that you violated the law, and so you're going to pay a consequence for it. You're going to have a consequence for it. But in this case, these executive actions, you don't even really know what they're doing, especially as relates to the gun sales. And as Hugh Hewitt said, you're putting everybody at jeopardy. So you're going to have a chilling effect on people exercising their Second Amendment rights because they don't know if they're going to be the target of prosecution. And these are the wrong people to be going after. The felony gun control or the felony gun convictions have gone down under President Obama's administration. Those are the people and those are the violations that the president should be focusing on.
But we're running out of time here on this end of the week show, Gail. And I want to ask if you have anything else to add about this gun issue before we ask you about this Hillary Clinton very sort of late thing that happened last night or was talked about yesterday and last night about the pretty seriousness of a possible indictment of her. Some people were talking about in Washington. But any more of the gun issue before we move on?
I think on the gun issue, we're going to continue to see this as part of President Obama's legacy that he wants to have, and I think he's going to continue to press forward on it and use every media organ and every other possibility he has to advance his agenda. And I think the underlying agenda is not really about trying to make our communities safer, which is what I want.
Right. And that's a thing that is it was said repeatedly, and I just it makes me cringe and makes me so angry when I hear it. And the president said as much last night. We've got the nation divided between people who want to or who are concerned about gun violence and those who are not. And he's essentially saying that those of us who disagree with his prescription
right.
for this don't care about gun violence. And the tears he shed for the kids at Sandy Hook, you know, because we disagree with them, I guess we don't care about those kids is his insinuation there. And that to me is ridiculous.
And offensive.
And extremely offensive. All right. I don't know if you read about it or heard it. We don't usually quote other radio shows, but there was a district attorney, a former U.S. attorney, I'm sorry, from the District of Columbia, who told Laura Ingraham's show earlier this week that Hillary Clinton will be indicted. The FBI, quote, has so much information about criminal conduct by her and her staff that there is no way that they walk away from this. Joseph DeGeneva, former district attorney of District of Columbia's U.S. attorney, told Laura Ingraham, they're going to make a recommendation that people be charged, and then Loretta Lynch is going to have the decision of a lifetime. And there's going to be some sort of showdown, he's predicting, if a bunch of FBI administrators quitting if Loretta Lynch somehow tries to block the indictment on this candidate for president, Hillary Clinton. What do you make of this?
I don't believe it. I think she should be prosecuted based on just the information that's out there in the public. She was using a homebrew server for confidential information, and I think there are, 1,400 examples of confidential emails that she received. So it seems pretty clear on the face of the evidence that's out before the public that she should be indicted and that it should go to a jury to decide if she has violated the law. But I think that will never happen. And I would predict that it won't happen until Lois Lerner, who is the IRS employee, who there was lots of evidence showing that she was basically behind targeting disfavored political opposition groups to try and audit them and intimidate them and deny them tax-exempt status. And she pled the fifth in front of Congress, which she's being paid by the taxpayers to do this job. She took the fifth and wouldn't answer Congress's questions about her job as the head of this tax-exempt agency in the IRS until she is prosecuted by this Department of Justice. There is no way that someone of Hillary Clinton's stature and importance to the Democratic Party is going to be ever going to be prosecuted.
Yeah, she got off scot-free, by the way, Lois Lerner, and is collecting a pension from U.S. taxpayers as we speak.
You and me.
Yeah. Gail Trotter, it was so great having you back on the show. It's been way too long. We should cancel Christmas and New Year's next year so that we don't have this long of a break.
Well, Joan and our children might not like that so much, but
that's true.
Other than that, I think it would be great.
Yeah. All right, Gail, have a wonderful weekend. Happy New Year, and thanks so much for coming back on to the Michael Kulich Show.
Happy New Year, and great to be with you, Michael.
That is going to do it for this hour of the Michael Kulich Show and week. We will see you at Kulich.com, that's spelled with a K, from the Rise Broadband Studios. Until next week, no matter what you do, keep that radio on.